United States Court of International Trade is now in session. The Honorable Mark A. Barnett presiding before Consolidated Court Number 18-00222, Aspects Furniture International, Inc. versus the United States. Will the attorneys please state their names for the record, starting with the plaintiff?
But you're going to have to unmute yourself, Mr. Snyder. You're still muted. Yep. There you go. Oh, nope. There. You're nope. Whatever toggling you're doing there, it's not, it was, you need, if you're using the space bar, I think maybe you have to just keep holding it down. So we're still not hearing you.
Can you hear me?
Now we can. Yes.
Okay. Good morning, Your Honor. Robert W. Snyder on behalf of plaintiff AFI with my associate, Ms. Moya. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. Marcella Powell on behalf of defendant, the United States and Customs, U.S. Customs and Border Protection. And with me on the argument is Paula Smith, Assistant Chief Counsel of the Assistant Office of the Assistant Chief Counsel's Office, United States and Customs Border Protection.
Good morning. Still have 2 minutes left to say that, so we're okay. All right. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for getting on the line on relatively short notice. As you know, the court issued a question or a request for some additional briefing a little while back. We received the briefing, and after reading through it, determined that perhaps the court was less than articulate in the question that it was seeking additional information on. And so I thought maybe this would be the quickest, easiest way to try to reconcile that issue. And maybe it's possible everybody was overthinking the issue as well. I think it was intended to be a fairly straightforward, fairly simple question. And that is, again, we're focused only on the one of the entries of AFI, that 386-5 entry. And I think it is undisputed that that entry deemed liquidated. For that purpose, it doesn't really matter whether we're talking about a start date for the 6 months of May 12 or May 30, regardless of what that start date is, the entry deemed liquidated in November. I think it's also undisputed that December 1st is within 90 days of whatever that date in November was. And the question was specific as to section 1501, not 1504. And in that sense, what I'm trying to figure out is if the entry deemed liquidated in November and Customs, and for purposes of this discussion, we'll focus on the version of 1501 as of 2016. And so if Customs on December 1st had authority pursuant to 1501 to reliquidate that entry, and Customs in fact took action on December 1st, where such action for these purposes was identified as, you know, a liquidation rather than a reliquidation. So the drop-down menu, somebody clicked the wrong box or checked the wrong thing in the drop-down menu, whatever the mechanism was. They identified the action that they were taking on December 1st as a liquidation rather than a reliquidation. That's all I'm trying to get at, is if that's what happened, why does that factual scenario fit into what the Federal Circuit identified as harmless error, the harmless error rubric, if you will, in intercargo and subsequent cases? I think we'll leave that. Hopefully, that setup provides a little bit more clarity. I'm not looking at 1504, but just 1501 for these purposes. So with that, Mr. Snyder, maybe you want to take the first shot addressing whether in that scenario we are potentially looking at a harmless error question on the part of Customs, and if not, why not, or how was your client prejudiced by that error?
Well, Your Honor, as stated in the brief, I understand the court's concern 1501, and upon review, this is a statute, and the court wants to just focus on 1501. There is a statute that says that there's strict compliance, and unlike what we discussed or is discussed in Intercargo, it's not a regulatory matter. This is strict compliance to a statute with consequences.
Mr. Snyder, I think you're back on 1504. I understand the consequences of 1504D. Those are consequences if Customs fails to liquidate within 6 months.
Yes.
Okay. 1501 is a separate statutory provision. It coexists with 1504D. I have to read it as coexisting. I have to read it as having meaning. I have to read it as not being obviated by 1504. That's why your focus on 1504 doesn't answer the question for me. It's clear if you look at 1501, it talks about reliquidation if a liquidation was made in accordance with section 1500 or 1504. On its face, it exists with 1504, and so I can't ignore that fact. I'm trying to give you a chance to address it in this sense here. And so going back to 1504 and telling me deemed liquidation has to, is a consequence doesn't help resolve the question.
Your Honor, what we have here is December 1st, according to the factual record, this was a liquidation. And as such, the liquidation is.
Yep. Okay. I don't know. Hopefully you can hear us, Mr. Snyder. We've lost your video and your audio. You seem to have frozen up.
Sam, any thoughts?
Your Honor, I'm getting a message of a very low bandwidth, so it's possible his Wi-Fi just got disconnected.
Okay. We'll give him a...
Ms. Moy, anyway, you can try and check with Mr. Snyder. If we have to, maybe he'll have to dial in, but...
I think he's back.
He seems to be coming back.
Okay, great.
Okay. We lost you partway through your response there, Mr. Snyder. So why don't you start over?
I'm saying with regard to the record, what's before this court is December 1st is a liquidation. This court is considering this along with, I don't know if you, in the consolidated case, we have the very same issue, but the evidence is quite clear. It said reliquidation. To rewrite and say that this is pretty much like Intercargo, harmless error, it isn't. It is
Why not?
A matter of the record that it was a liquidation.
But Intercargo was, I understand that. I mean, practical difference. Help me understand what the practical difference is there. If everything else that Customs did in the action that it took on December 1st was the functional equivalent of a reliquidation, they simply checked the wrong box. I mean, for these, it's just a mistake. Let's assume that the official here knew it, even for this purpose, knew that it was in fact supposed to be a reliquidation and they just checked the wrong box. What is the practical consequence? What is, whether it's a prejudice or something else or some other factual distinction here? Because remember, in Intercargo, you had a similar situation in that Customs was required to give notice of of what it, you know, why it was extending the liquidation, and it was required to explain or, you know, identify one of three particular reasons, and it failed to do that. It just said we need more time rather than we need more information. Okay, and the parties in Intercargo could have been making the exact same argument you were, that if they didn't check the right box, they didn't explain properly, well, the record was devoid of a justification for the extension. And if that's the case, then, you know, I'm having a difficult time figuring out why here we have, you know, we have something. Apologies here. I have other things going off trying to get through. No matter how many different things I hit as do not disturb, there are too many electronic connections that I can't stop all of them. But, you know, it seems to me that this is the functional equivalent. So the question here, I mean, and in fact, speaking of functional equivalents, I mean, that's in fact some of the language that the court in Intercargo cited was Supreme Court language from Smith v. Barry, where they talked about, you know, that strict adherence to, in that case, it was the requirements of Rule 3 is not a prerequisite. The question is, as long as the litigant's action is the functional equivalent of what the rule requires. And so my question here is trying to understand, is there, how would you say that the action Customs took on December 1st was not the functional equivalent of a reliquidation that they had statutory authority to take on December 1st?
Your Honor, you've gone through Intercargo in the case of that you're discussing. It was a regulatory issue. The fact is that Customs did notify that they were going to extend the period, and it wasn't totally in compliance with a regulatory requirement. But the court did say in that case that there was notice. It just wasn't as pretty. It was a regulatory kind of thing. You notify the parties that we're going to extend, and they list a regulatory things. It wasn't totally in compliance. In the case we have here, it isn't like the regulatory kind of thing, give the reasons for extending it. And it isn't just checking the wrong box. It is in fact an error of complying with a statute, not with an administrative regulation. The court in Intercargo went out of its way to say that, yes, you did get notice. It wasn't as pretty as it could be, and you didn't check the right box, but it's regulatory. In the case of this entry, it is a statutory, and it isn't a regulatory thing. The court keeps saying checking the wrong box, and the fact is when this was enacted, the statute was enacted, it was for the very reason to protect the public interest. It's much like a statute of limitations. Well, I'm sorry, I've had this case before where in the court in the Central District of California, the grand jury missed the statute by 2 days. And the court had no choice but to say, this is a statute and it's enacted for the public interest and it must be complied with. Checking the wrong box is not the same or an equivalency of a regulatory kind of requirement that, you know, the court went out of its way in that case to say, yeah, you didn't do it perfectly, but you did give notice. Now, it's a hard fact that the record, and it was liquidated on December 1st. Now, oh, I'm sorry, we're going to erase it. Not only that, but this matter has been in dispute. It could have been corrected. There was 90 days. It wasn't done. It is a statutory error that has strict consequences under the law. And for this court to rewrite and say, well, you know, it's the same as a regulatory matter is not protecting the public or fair about what the statute is about.
Okay, so one of the issues, Mr. Snyder, one of the issues in Mr. Snyder,
United States plenty of opportunity. It's called 90 days.
Mr. Snyder, let me ask you, so one of the things you talk about is that the consequences, that there are consequences to the error. I mean, that's one of the things discussed in Intercargo as well. And one of the things that the panel said in Intercargo was that neither the statute nor the regulation dictated the necessary consequence of a defect in the notice. Is there some place in 1501 or is there somewhere, is there anywhere else that you want to identify that addresses the necessary consequence of a customs failure to properly provide notice of reliquidation pursuant to 1501?
Your Honor, may I have Ms. Moya direct to that answer?
Sure.
Ms. Moya?
The simple answer to that question specifically is no, but what we're trying to say is that the practical consequence of simply assuming that customs made an error in practice and didn't mark it as a reliquidation and marked it as a liquidation, the practical consequence of that would be that every untimely liquidation done by customs, as long as it's within the 90 days, will be automatically saved by customs coming after the fact and saying, okay, yeah, we don't know what happened in practice. We probably marked the wrong box, or we really wanted to do a liquidation, but lucky for us, it's within 90 days, so it will be saved. So if we accept
what's wrong,
the scenario,
Ms. Moya, Ms. Moya, what's wrong with that?
Then
isn't that exactly what 1501 says? Customs gets 90 days to fix a mistake.
Yes, but to fix it, not to come after the fact and say, oh, good thing we have this to save us, like a safety net. It's not a safety net. It's a voluntary reliquidation. Customs, indeed, 1501 and the 2016 amendments got rid of the requirement to provide notice. But that was also to limit, the purpose behind those amendments was to limit customs authority, because what had happened in practice is that customs waited years and years to give the notice of deemed liquidation, like this case. And then after that, they granted themselves 90 days to reliquidate. And courts analyzing this situation over and over again said, that's not fair. Reliquidation is not open-ended. We don't want to leave it for customs for any situation. We don't want to give it to customs like that on a silver plate. So the fact that that requirement was deleted, canceled, doesn't mean that customs doesn't have to do it in practice, that doesn't have to do a reliquidation. And if we believe that if we accept that, then 1501 will obviate the consequence of 1504. That's why we can't really separate the consequence of 1504. Even if we were to assume that, yes, okay, customs made a mistake, let's evaluate this mistake from a 1501 standpoint only, doing that will obviate 1504, basically.
So is your position that customs lacks statutory authority to use section 1501 in the case of a deemed liquidation?
No, absolutely not. But it has to be a reliquidation. It cannot be.
But okay, so we're back to my question here. Okay, if what is the practical functional distinction between a reliquidation and a liquidation for these purposes?
The practical distinction is that when custom liquidation is supposed to be the final computation of entries, reliquidation is supposed to be a correction.
They corrected here. They said, well, it deemed liquidated erroneously at the cash deposit rate at the time of entry, and we are correcting it because the correct anti-dumping duty rate is X, not Y.
We believe, based on the record that we have, that that's not what happened, because deemed liquidation
What's different? What is different? Explain to me precisely, please, exactly what the distinction is other than the label of a liquidation versus reliquidation. And the fact that it was the correct anti-dumping duties were assessed on December 1st.
Another point to be brought to that is that when
let's go back to the question.
The current practice of when CBP liquidates entries, ever since the electronic notice has become the only notice of liquidation, is that entries are liquidated a couple of days before a Friday, and then they get posted on only a Friday. It's always a Friday, which in this case was November 30th. It was December 1st, sorry. So customs in this case probably liquidated prior to that, but in order to produce effects, that liquidation only produces effects when it is posted by customs, which was December 1st. So that's why we're saying evaluating both the record and the current practice of CBP with liquidations. This was actually a liquidation, but they failed to post it timely. They simply failed to post it timely. And I guess the luck was that it was only 1 day. That was the only difference.
They had 90 days to fix it. And so the posting, so even if the posting didn't occur until after the 90th day, what's wrong with simply saying, okay, well, at that point, it is a valid reliquidation because they had the authority to collect those duties. They did not lose statutory authority to collect anti-dumping duties.
The way we read and interpret the amendments brought to 1501 is not as broad as that scenario, because we think it's not supported by the history of 1501 and by the amendments.
All right. So let me finish your thought.
Sorry.
All right. Well, I want to go back to, I mean, something, and maybe this goes back to Mr. Snyder then. I don't want to get into a tag team between the two of you. I encourage attorneys to let their, younger colleagues participate in the argument, but I prefer to have something a little structured in terms of the division. But in this, so you all can decide who's going to respond to it. I mean, it goes back to a follow-up to something that Mr. Snyder said. He sought to draw a distinction between this scenario and intercargo by saying, well, in intercargo, it was a regulatory requirement that customs had failed to meet. Here, this is a statutory requirement. And I want to go back and just ask whether is your argument then, is your position that the concept or the idea of harmless error does not apply with respect to a statutory requirement? And if that's the case, what is your authority?
Well, Your Honor, it's a statute requires not discretion. The statute has here that you have to comply with the statutory statement. And now to rewrite a statute, you didn't comply with statute. That is not something that is open to kind of factual interpretation. You have a statute.
I understand that. I understand that, Mr. Snyder. I'm asking you for a citation to legal authority. You're suggesting that the idea of harmless error doesn't apply with respect to a statutory requirement. I'm simply asking you, I think I understand that position. What is your legal authority for that position?
I don't have the availability of statute right now, the authority, Your Honor, sorry.
Okay. All right.
Your Honor, if I may, I think I can provide at least what we relied on as authority.
Okay.
It's Torres versus Oakland Scavenger Co. 487.
Is this cited in your supplemental brief?
Yes, it's on page 9.
Okay.
Yes.
No, your supplemental brief was only 8 pages.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was page 9, CMECF paging.
Right. Okay.
In that case.
Oh, Torres. There it is. Okay. Well, but I think that's I suspect, again, looking at even just the how you characterize that case, that's a situation where the statute provides for the consequences of the failure to meet the statutory requirements, which is not necessarily, or which doesn't appear to be the case with respect to 1501.
Right.
Okay, so then your citation wouldn't hold if that's the case.
We're saying that it doesn't need to be read as narrowly, and it should apply in this case as well.
Okay. All right. I think I understand your position. Let's turn to Ms. Powell and give you a chance to address that same question or comment on the arguments presented by plaintiffs.
Yes, Your Honor. We agree with Your Honor that 1504D and 1501 should be considered separately. 1504D, and as you said in the beginning of this argument, we can all agree that under 1504D, that one entry did deem liquidated. And as to that, 1501 does not undo a deemed liquidation. It just allows customs 90 days to go ahead and reliquidate. So it doesn't undo 1504D. So the second thing we wanted to address is Your Honor's point on the functional, I think you mentioned functional equivalent of the liquidation versus the reliquidation. We agree they are equivalent. There is nothing, and plaintiff hasn't pointed to anything extra or additional that would have happened if there was a reliquidation. There wasn't any extra notice that was supposed to be given, any extra rights to be conferred on a reliquidation. It's essentially the same thing for these purposes. It's just a different label. And in terms of the other point that plaintiff raised about harmless error being sort of limited by Intercargo to regulation, we disagree with that. There's a sentence, since we're confining it to Intercargo, there's a sentence in the decision where it's actually talking about prejudice, and it says essentially prejudice as used in this setting, the harmless error setting, means injury to an interest that the statute, regulation, or rule in question was designed to protect. So harmless error is not just limited to regulations. It can be applied to statutes. And I'm not saying all statutes, but you know, it's just not limited to regulations. The other point, and I think we made this point in our supplemental submission, is that in terms of you know, this being a reliquidation versus reliquidation and harm, plaintiff did not allege harm. There was no harm. They were able to protest. They were able to bring their action in court. They don't allege that the duties that were assessed, the amounts were incorrect. We cannot see any harm here. And I think that's probably it, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ms. Powell. Mr. Snyder, anything further in reply?
I have nothing. Ms. Moyer, do you have anything?
If I may, just a couple of follow-up notes. I would like to correct Ms. Powell in the sense that 1501 does require an extra procedure, and that is notice. It does require the notice of reliquidation be transmitted by CBP. There's no consequence specifically dictated by the statute as to what happens when that notice isn't provided, but there is something extra than we would expect if a reliquidation had happened, which we
didn't see. If the notice inadvertently refers to a liquidation rather than a reliquidation, why is that? Why would that not constitute harmless error, which is the point of this discussion?
The problem with that is that also the defendant has never argued that point. Defendant has never argued that Customs made a mistake and labeled a reliquidation as liquidation. They've never, and not none of their briefing have
they have argued throughout that the action that was taken on December 1st constituted a reliquidation, notwithstanding being labeled as liquidation. And I'm simply trying to put that into a legal box that, you know, withstands judicial scrutiny, and harmless error seems to be the straightforward, you know, yes. I mean, it's almost the obvious construct that reconciles everything that happened here.
We understand that from a legal perspective, but from a factual and record perspective, we don't understand why the government hasn't been able to provide something to rebut this erroneous record that they claim exists. They provided affidavits from Customs to clarify other aspects in this case. They could have provided an affidavit saying, you know, someone ticked the wrong box. It happens every now and then. But ever since 2016, we have authority to categorize that as a reliquidation and move on to the legal arguments. That is not on this record. They've never argued that, and they've never even attempted to provide something which only them would have access to. We wouldn't have access to, and we believe that that is a prerequisite for the court to consider the harmless error for 1501 and what Customs did in that. And without that, it's just adding to the record without anything to rebut the record factually first, and then supplemented with the legal discussion and the application of the legal authority of harmless error.
Okay. Anything further?
Your Honor, can I make one mention?
Certainly.
Just to sort of like address those two points. One, the notice of reliquidation that's actually set forth in 1501, we agree, to the extent we're doing a harmless error analysis, you know, that could apply, but also there's no allegation that they didn't get notice. We're here in court, so clearly there was notice of the liquidation. Secondly, in our brief, in our reply brief, we actually did say, there's a sentence in our reply brief that we actually say the liquidation should have been coded a reliquidation. So it's not like we never addressed it. We did. So again, I think this boils down to, again, there's no prejudice. There's no practical difference. There's no prejudice. And that's it. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Powell. Okay. Anything further from anyone?
Well, Your Honor, the only thing that the court reviews this, Mr. Snyder, the preliminary statement of fact clearly indicated was a liquidation. There was no dispute. And now we come later. No discovery, nothing, as Ms. Moya said. But just, hey, it's a reliquidation. Get used to it. I mean, the record is clear. I mean, we have this thing going on. And, you know, I now want to call the reliquidation and the consolidated case a liquidation. What you can't do that. There was a statement of facts beginning in this case, and it's all been liquidation.
Right. I mean, there isn't any dispute, Mr. Snyder, that the document says.
I'm fine, Your Honor. That's my.
Okay.
That's all I have to say.
Right. Okay. I mean, I don't think I understand what you're saying, and I don't think that as a factual matter, there is no factual dispute with regard to how the action taken by Customs was characterized in the documentation. It is characterized as a liquidation. The question is does that have to be given such legal significance that it cannot be considered via the harmless error doctrine to be effectively a reliquidation for purposes of 1501? But all right. Thank you all for joining today. I appreciate it. This has been helpful. We are making good progress in terms of trying to resolve this case and hoping to turn things around fairly quickly. And again, I appreciate your cooperation here. I hope everyone's continuing to do well. I know we've had a number, it seems like the activity in this case has largely coincided with the beginning, the middle, and hopefully now also the end of the pandemic. So I hope you all continue to stay safe, stay healthy, and that, well, I hope, I presume that we're not going to need to do this again, but at some point that we will be able to gather again in person, whether it's in New York, DC, California, wherever the case may be, that hopefully we're, you know, we don't continue to look at each other through the Hollywood Squares lens of our of our computer screens. So take care, everyone, and thank you again.
Thank you, Your Honor.
This case fits right in with the new normal.
Right. All right. Thank you. All right. Bye-bye.
Your Honor.
Bye.